Welcome to the Embrace It series, where women with all types of disabilities can be real, resourceful, and stylish. With each episode, you'll walk or roll away with everyday tips, life hacks, and success stories from community leaders and influencers. So take off your leg braces and stay a while with Lainey and Estella.
Hi, I'm Lainey, and I have CMT.
And I'm Estella, and I also have CMT, a neuromuscular disorder affecting approximately 2.6 million people worldwide.
That's as many as MS. We believe disabilities should never get in the way of looking or feeling good. Both of us wear leg braces and have learned through our own personal journeys to embrace it.
Brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios, each episode is designed to challenge your own stigmas and beliefs around disability. We want our listeners to get the most value for their time spent with us, so we interview some of the most empowering disability badasses in the world. Through storytelling, personal experiences, and tips, we're all reminded of our own strengths and endless potential.
For more information and exclusive resources, check out our websites at trend-able.com and hnf-cure.org. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button for future episodes and special promos.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Embrace It podcast with Lainey and Estella.
Hi everyone.
It is the end of summer here. It's coming to a close, but we have a fun guest who will bring the heat from Florida. Her name is Yadit Dua. She is a disability and inclusion advocate. She is a content creator. She is a model. She's a badass. And we've been following her for a while, and we're so excited to speak with you today, Yadit. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me and for that amazing introduction. I'm really, really excited to come out here and share, you know, a little bit of my story and my experience with everyone that's listening. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yadit, Estella sent me your little TED Talk on, and I love the title. Especially, which was why I should be the next Sports Illustrated model in 2023. So to kick us off, you know, I think you should, and maybe everyone else is going to put in their vote as well. Can you start telling us about yourself, how you acquired, if you acquired a disability, or, you know, how you entered the disability community, and kind of just a little synopsis of who you are, what you do, and where you came from?
Yeah. So I started advocating, like, kind of like my career. I started 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago now, during the pandemic. And, you know, when I became disabled when I was 15. I went through cancer. And after receiving treatment for chemotherapy and radiation, I developed like a spinal cord injury. And that caused my disability when I was 15. So at that time and at that age, I really didn't see any representation out there. And I grew up in Venezuela. I moved to the US when I was 18 years old. So especially in Latin America, I didn't see anyone on the media, anyone not even around me that had a disability and that lived a happy life with a disability. So it was very difficult at that time for me to understand what was happening and how I was going to become an adult and do all the things that I always thought I was doing and do all the dreams that I had. So about 2 years ago, when I was younger, before my disability, I always wanted to be a model. I always wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I was in every activity. I dance and like a lot of performances during my life. So back in 2020, I was just like thinking about what I wanted to do with my life. And obviously I had a lot of free time during the pandemic to think about what I wanted to do, just because I got furloughed from my job and kind of like the career path that I was in. It was one that was exciting and I liked it, but I didn't feel that was what I was meant to do. Like that didn't necessarily fit as an answer of the things that made me passionate and the things that I wanted to do. So about that time is when I started kind of like doing the easiest thing I could do, which was like taking photos and putting them on the internet and like making reels, and started to like just put myself out there. And through putting myself out there, I found like many connections and I found an agency for modeling. And then I gained like a community of followers, and that's kind of like how I started advocating. And I obviously started learning more about disability and what I can do and how I can make things better. And it's just been a constant learning from my community. I feel like we give each other, you know, so much wisdom, and we learn from each other's experiences. So it's been amazing.
We love seeing all of the fun traveling, especially that you do online. But before we get into that, I don't want to, you know, underestimate their journey that it took for you to go from a fully abled teenager to having a disability. After, take us more through that. What was that emotional transition and journey for you? Because I think a lot of people don't necessarily associate cancer with a risk of having a disability. And I know through chemo-induced neuropathy, whether that's the cause or, you know, something that was affected with a surgery that was this cancer related. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that journey is? Because I think there's a lot.
Especially the spinal cord part, you know, because for those who are listening, and I'm sure, you know this, you've heard this a million times, Estella and I both have Charcot-Marie tooth disease. And one of the drugs that I see on the do not take ever, like there's all these, you know, this could make it worse, this could make your disease worse. But like the one that people say, oh, this really does make everything worse if you have CMT, is a chemotherapy related drug, which Estella alluded to. But a spinal cord disability, like how does that happen?
So to take you a little bit back through that emotional roller coaster that it was, when I first got cancer, I feel like I was still too young to understand all of the complication and what it meant. Up until that time in my life, I knew cancer could be deadly, but I really had not experienced cancer in my family or anyone around me. And it's really crazy to think that your friend's going to get cancer or your parents are going to get cancer, but even crazier to think that you're the one that's going to get it. So obviously that thought never even crossed my mind until the point that the news were delivered to me. Because up until then, I had gone through surgery and something was going on and they talked about treatment, but no one ever mentioned the word cancer. So then up until that day, I walked into the doctor's office and I see that it's a chemo treatment center. I obviously understood and, you know, sat down to the doctor and asked about everything that was going to happen, how long the treatment was going to be, and what I could expect. So the doctor did not go easy on that. Obviously, he gave the worst case scenario just kind of to prepare me. It was going to be a year-long experience to go through like about 12 cycles of chemotherapy every 21 days. And then after that, we had 22 sessions of radiation. And in between those, like that year, we had one surgery planned. So I had already went through one surgery. This was going to be the second surgery. I had cancer on my ribs, on the left side of my back, and it's basically a cancer that is osteosarcoma. It's very common on children and teenagers because it grows on the bones, and usually the growth happens on this year when you're a kid and you're growing, and then the cells go crazy and build a tumor, and it's from the bone. So mine was specifically on my ribs. Throughout all of this time, I had to go through the treatments, and I kind of saw this plan that we had with the doctor and everyone as a goal, like as a personal goal that I was going to finish. There were not going to be complications. Obviously, in my mind, there were plenty of complications, but I kind of saw it as an end goal. And I was like, this is how many days I have until the end of treatment. And I try to do my best during that time. Like I still try to live life. I still try to like go out, and it was difficult because like some things I was able to do, but some others I just couldn't. Like I had to stay home. I couldn't go out, be too exposed. But after that, and thinking that it was over and that I was going to go back to normal, you know, finding out that I was developing a disability was kind of like, I started losing balance. I started having losing sensation on my feet and just losing strength in general during a trip. I was on a trip and I was just feeling all the symptoms, had no clue what was going on. And this was also like after 3 months after finishing my treatment, which was the last treatment I did was radiation. So 3 months after is when I started feeling the symptoms. And going back to the doctor, trying to figure out what's going on, it was an emotional roller coaster because a lot of people didn't have answers. So it's so difficult to go to a doctor and they are like, we don't know what caused it. This could have been, this could have been, this could have been. And we don't know how to stop it, you know? And what we can recommend is that you do physical therapy. But after having a diagnosis of cancer, knowing exactly what I could do to fix it and come into a disability diagnosis and like this situation that I was in, basically, and not having an answer to what can I take to make this stop? What can I do to make it better? And still not knowing if it was going to be permanent. A lot of doctors were like, it might be permanent. It might not be permanent. So I obviously have many, many questions. And I was very upset about the fact that I couldn't understand why I was going through something so difficult after winning, you know, after just winning this battle against cancer. I was so lost on understanding why this was happening. And obviously at that point, I thought that was the worst thing that could have happened to me because I was a dancer, because I was active all the time. And I had no clue generally how I was going to do my life just because I didn't see it anywhere. I didn't have any role models. I simple things. I didn't know how I was going to be able to drive, how I was going to be able to date, how just the simple things on life. I have no clue how I was going to do. So obviously it was very difficult and it took me some time. I will say it took me about probably 6 months. Like the first 3 months were a lot about finding out, like going to doctors, doing treatments, starting physical therapy. Physical therapy was done at the house because I was very limited physically. I couldn't really move a lot. And I went from having a cane to two canes to a walker. And they really didn't know where I was going to stop, like until what point I was going to lose strength. So physical therapy was at my house. I didn't go to school for that beginning of the year. And the last 3 months of that period were pretty much adjusting to my new life, to what I was going to do next. And I already knew that I had to start the school year that next year. So I was kind of preparing to, okay, how am I going to do this? We got to continue. Like life is going on, basically. So mental health wise, it was a lot, obviously, because I had to figure that out. But I think I got to a point where I was more like, well, I am 15, about to be 16, and I will never be this age again. And I really don't know how I'm going to figure life out, but I'm just not going to stop because of this kind of like my mindset. I was like, I'm still going to find a way to have fun. I'm still going to like go out with my friends, live my life. And I think on the way there, on the journey that I'm going on, I'll probably figure it out. And that's a big part of like my personality. I will say like a lot of the things that I've done in my life is because I've taken the risk and find out on the way, like that had not paralyzed me from like living my life. I remember asking for permission to my parents being like, oh, I want to go to this concert. And they're like, well, how are you going to do it? It's crowded, full of people. It's probably not accessible. And I was like, I'm not sure, but I have friends around me and like I'm with the right people and I will figure it out. And a lot of the things that I started doing were on situations like that. Cause one thing is that Venezuela and, you know, I think the rest of Latin America in general needs to be more accessible. So even if it's already difficult here in America, I feel like even more there. So it was not accessible at all. And I had to figure a lot of things out.
You know, there's so many things that struck me when you were talking, and I definitely want to get to the concert part. And now as an adult that you are, I see on your Instagram, Estella tells me how you're always going here and there. And I know our listeners would love to hear like about your tips and how you do that and as an adult and, you know, plan accordingly and all that. So we'll get to that in a minute. But as I was looking at the story, I was like picturing, you know, your countdown calendar to being done with cancer treatments. And you're just like, you know, you're a kid, you like have this calendar. It's like school is, you know, it's like counting down to, you know, summer vacation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and all you hear as I would imagine as a cancer patient and people who are just live in this world is I've survived cancer. I've survived. I'm at the 1 year, I'm at the 5 year. And here you are just like counting down until you get to start counting on your survival. And then, you know, you get to that end and you now have all these challenges, physical challenges that you didn't have before, right? So like you said, it was like 6 months and you made it seem like that's a long time. To me, it's like, wow, like what are you like, you know, stopping the search for what can help you to fix your disabilities, your newly acquired disabilities, and then to acceptance. Like the acceptance part, you know, like that isn't your personality. That's like something in you that is like, okay, like I, you know, this is my reality now. Like talk about that for a minute. Like that couldn't have been quick, right? Like you are like now having a disability. Like when did you start saying I have a disability? Like when was that point?
So the first thing was that I started more going into this mindset when I was around 17. So like from 15 to 16, I'm still looking to a lot of solutions. My parents are looking for solutions. Everyone's, you know, I'm still doing physical therapy, but like when I was 17, I had already adjusted a lot. Like I adapted my life. Like I was not letting my disability stop me from the things that I was doing. So at that point, I'm very confident on like doing a lot of things. However, I'm still very lost into my identity and how to address and say that I have a disability, or how do I explain to people when they are like, what happened to you? Or, you know, that I then define myself took a while. And I will say it was more when I moved to the US. So when I was more like 19, 20, when I started identifying more as a disabled person, and I stopped looking for more answers. And like, I kind of accepted my reality. And obviously it was also too, cause I moved from my parents. So like, I was kind of like, I'm done. Like I am happy where I am. Like, you guys need to stop looking for solutions. Like, I'm okay. Like, you know, it was, and it's not like you give up and you don't like try to get, but it's just accepting that this is what happened and it's a permanent thing. And of course you will do anything to fix it, but you don't want to live your life thinking or making it all about this one solution. Cause like, that's just not how I found my happiness personally. So I will say more when I turned 19, 20 and I was a few years into my disability, I started accepting. And the more I saw people put themselves out there online and share their story, the more confident I gained in who I was.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you already had a very supportive group of friends and family around you. Were there any role models or, you know, examples of empowered disabled women that you particularly really gravitated to and connected with?
So someone that I saw online a long time ago, one of the first persons that I found on the internet was Jillian Mercado. Mm-hmm. She's the model. So obviously she was one of the first people that I was like, oh my God, like, look at these women. Like, so that was one of my first role models. But back in the day, back home, I can tell you nobody, because it's just also a lot of the cancer patients that I met and everyone that's in treatment with me, they didn't go through a similar situation. Like, this was kind of like a new thing for my doctor too. So he was like, what are we doing? Like, what is happening? Like, nobody had an answer. So I didn't have anyone for a long time, like a role model like that. And yes, I had a great, great support system, because everyone in my family and my friends, they were so willing to adapt and so willing to, we'll get there and we'll figure out with you. And since I was very young, I also learned, you know, to look for those quality in the people that I surround myself with. So it never comes as a surprise to me. I'm always grateful that I have these friends and people around me, but it, you know, I wouldn't expect less. I wouldn't settle for less, that I got to say. And I think everyone should go into making friends and, you know, with that mentality of they are your true friends. They're going to adapt with you and they're going to be willing to help and understand. So.
Can I stop you right there? Cause I think, you know, not knowing if our listeners have these questions, I have these questions. So like, mm-hmm. You know, young woman, right? And even if you have great friends that are awesome human beings, you now have a disability. You're totally, you know, different in that you're not able to run with them if they're, you know, late for a concert. Let's say, you know, let's take the concert as an example. Yeah. Your friends and you all want to go to a concert. It's not as simple anymore. It's not, if they're the kind of people who like to stand in the front and, you know, whatever, I don't even know what the term is anymore, but, you know, dance and like, it's a very crowded space. I know I personally wouldn't put myself in that situation. It would be very dangerous. I don't have great balance. You use ability device. I would imagine that's not your choice. I don't know that, but like your friends, as good as they are, their lives are changed as well. Like they, Did you feel guilty? Did you feel like you were holding people back? Like, how does that go on? And like, how do you do a concert?
Yeah. So back in the day, I felt like I will still have some doubts about that. Like I'll still get, you know, when it was my first time, for example, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to hold them back. I don't want to, you know, I don't want them to be here because of me. But one thing I learned with like going to concerts and experience is that communication is key. So like being open with your friends is the best thing you can do. Like, and having friends that are also willing to ask and tell you how they feel exactly. So basically what I do now is that I'm very open. I'm like, hey, I really don't feel comfortable going there, but I'm totally fine if you do. Like, I'll be fine for a few minutes alone. Like, I'm, you know, and I learned to be flexible in that way. I don't need to grab my friends with me all the time. Like if I'm in an ADA section, for example, and they want to go out there. Sometimes I will go out there with them, but like, depends on how I feel. So like, I think the communication that you have with your friends and, you know, it's so nice when they ask and they're like, hey, are you okay? Are you good here? Do you want to go? How do you feel? You know, so being that open relationship with friends, family, it's so important because I feel like that's just the only way you understand each other. I would never want my friends to hold back because of me, but I also would love to for them to tell me what they want to do. And if they don't want to be there, they should be able to tell me. And, you know, just kind of like have that mindset of being flexible with each other. Everyone deserves a chance to have fun. And if I think this is comfortable and fun, I'm going to stay here. We'll be together for a little bit. Then we'll do a little bit of what you want to do. Just like any friendship in general, you should be open to listen to each other and have a balance in there. And as far as concert, back then in Venezuela, like when I first started going, I will always try to find a chair for a little bit, but I still had my crutches. So I was walking with two crutches longer in the store. Then I like the physical therapy and gained strength, and I'm just walking with one. So to this day, I just walk with one crutch, like one forearm crutch, and I have a mobility scooter. So depends on where I'm going. I sometimes take my mobility scooter with me. If I know it's going to be a little walking in distance, I will take my mobility scooter just so I don't hold anyone back because I will walk slower. But I can walk for long periods of time because like I train a lot. I go to the gym every day. Like I have a lot of strength for standing and walking, but I just will be slower. So for that choice, I just take my mobility scooter. And it's so nice to have it because anytime you want to sit, you sit. Anything you want to stand, you stand. And a lot of the concerts that I go to and festivals do have ADA sections. So it's so, so great that you get to, you know, have that enclosed area where you can just sit and everyone's sitting there and you can take a break. And then maybe later you want to go into the crowd and you do so, but you can alternate.
That was what I wanted to know. Like, are you, because I mean, I'm picturing, I went to one concert recently, Jason Mraz, and it's like, old amphitheater here. I'm in the Detroit area. And, you know, as it turned out, my husband had had spine surgery and he's a marathon runner. So he was actually the one who had more of a struggle because it was a lot of steps all the way down and then all the way up. And I can do steps with a handrail without a problem. But if there's no handrail, I don't have balance. Okay.
Yes.
Kind of scary at a big busy concert where people are kind of blocking the handrail.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my question. Do you get seats that are in the accessible seats when you go to a sporting event, you go to a concert, are you getting the accessible seats all the time?
Not all the time, but I do look at the venue. So it depends on what venue it is. So if I know, like for that example of the handrail, or like no handrail at all. Like I try to find seats that are on the corner, lower, or like the accessible seats for sure. Or look at venues that have elevators. And thankfully I've been very lucky, but in those occasions, I'm almost never at a concert alone. Like I'm always with someone. I always have people in the front kind of blocking. So they move out of the handrail and I have the handrail for sure. Because I do have the same situation where I lose balance and I do need a handrail to go up and down the stairs.
Yeah. So do you say to your person that you're with, like, or do they just instinctively know? Like, because I'm thinking that's part of the communication, right? Not everyone would know. People who don't have disabilities would not even think that you, like, that someone is blocking the handrail and that could be a problem. Like, you have to be able to assess yourself initially to say, hey, when we go to this, I need to be able to have a handrail all the way down. Would you mind standing in front of me and like, you know, kicking people away or whatever?
Yeah. I've learned to communicate a lot. And that's something that I have to do. And it was outside my comfort zone for the longest time, but it's the only way I can let people, like, people are not going to read your mind. They're not feeling what you're feeling. So you have to be able to tell them and, you know, and just be kind about it. Just like, hey, will you mind standing here just so people are not coming my way? And that's it. Like, if you are with the right group of people, they will be happy to jump and do that for you.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
This is George, Fred, and Jason, the co-leaders of Speak, interrupting to say that we hope you're enjoying this episode, but please make sure to check out our new show, The Speak Podcast, another great show produced by Launchpad 516 Studios. New episodes available every week on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
Each Speak talk is about 6 to 10 minutes in length, and the talks are given in storytelling format. There are 3 key moments in each Speak talk: the moment of truth, the moment of transformation, and the moment of impact. We host pop-up events all over the world, and now we're bringing our talks to your device.
Join us on the Speak Podcast as our speakers step onto the stage and into the spotlight with impactful ideas and stories.
We'll let you get back to the show you were listening to, another great podcast from Launchpad 516 Studios.
You're tuning in to Embrace It with Lainey and Estella, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios. Speaking about being kind and communication, I know that's not always the case in certain scenarios. And I know you talk about, you know, interactions you have in public with ableism, and you're a young, beautiful woman, maybe using a mobility scooter or a crutch, and people are, you know, unfortunately judging you or assuming that you're faking it or you're too young and beautiful to have a disability. Can you tell us about a little bit about that? Because I feel like that's an important part of advocacy, is shining a light on, unfortunately, some of the ableism that still exists for people with disabilities in day-to-day things like going to the store and just living our lives.
Yeah. So I think the attitude and the way that you approach questions, even if it's a short answer, it lifts a perception on the people that ask you or said anything. I think the way I answer, it might not be a long answer to educate someone, but my attitude when I answer, they're like, oh, that's not what I expected. Like whenever I said, like, for example, they're like, what happened to you? And I'm like, I have a disability. Like, they're like so thrown off at the answer. It's so simple, but it's so funny how they did not expect that. And they're like, oh, and why is she saying it like that? That like, and there's the people that are like, I'm sorry. And I'm like, no, there's nothing to be sorry about. And, you know, there's all kinds of interaction that I get, nice, not so nice. And I get them all the time. I went to Vegas this weekend for a bachelor party, and a lot of people in Vegas had scooters, so I was just making fun of them. I was like, wow, I really do fit the demographic here. It's like all these casinos full with mobility scooters. So I was like, this is great. I'm driving. But of course, I had multiple interactions. And one of those was, it's funny because we're getting on an Uber, and my group of friends that I'm with are setting apart my scooter and putting it on the trunk. And the group of girls go to me and they're like, wow, you really have great friends. And I was like, thank you. They are amazing. But I honestly wouldn't expect less from my friends, and I wouldn't be with a group of friends that won't be willing to do that for me. Because again, I feel like this goes to the inspiration porn of like making your friends and your people that you're dating heroes just because they're dating you and you have a disability. And that's just so wow. And I don't see it as so wow. I think I'm surrounded by kind people. And if I had someone in the same situation, I'll jump out of my way to help them. But I think people need to be educated on that. And I wasn't rude to them. I was just like, thank you. And I obviously, I absolutely acknowledge my friends right after them that and explain that I'm not diminishing what they're doing for me. Like, I really appreciate it. But I think people need to stop with, wow, they're really great friends. And I was like, no, they are friends. That's what friends do. Mm-hmm. You know, if they don't do that, you're with the wrong group of people.
Yeah, and that, like, really your point, which we talk about a lot in our workshops, is like when people say, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Mm-hmm. In my TED Talk, I said, as an example of ableism, you know, but you're too pretty to be using crutches, or you're too pretty to be using a scooter. And I love, like, I feel like it's more impactful from someone, young, beautiful woman like yourself, to say it's not a tragedy. Thank you.
Yeah.
But, you know, and because you're educating in a kind way, and, you know, those girls are going to think differently the next time they say to someone, "Oh, it's so great that you're married to this woman. Like, oh, yeah, you poor thing that you have to, like, take care of her." And you're right, offering hugs to your friends as, or to your spouse, not you personally, but, like, it diminishes that person. It says, mm-hmm, like, "Oh, you're a charity case," that they're a contribution to the world. And, you know, you having that voice to be able to speak that, and you in your small world with this group of friends who you then in Vegas went back to, they heard the whole thing, and then you educated them. So they're going to go out there as able-bodied people in the world, and they have a totally different mindset just from you doing that one thing. It's awesome.
Yeah, they, as soon as I got in the car, they were like, "Wow, that was an amazing answer." Like, we're so proud of you. And I was like, "Thank you. I just cannot skip an opportunity to, like, acknowledge and, you know, correct it without being rude or anything." And there were so many interactions this weekend in Vegas. I had someone walk by me, and they were like, "Wow, how do I qualify by that to do that, like, to be on a scooter?" And I looked at them and I said, "You just have to buy it." I was like, "What? That you just have to buy a scooter if you want to be on one? Like, what are you talking about?"
I don't mean to interrupt, but, like, I'm thinking about, like, it's all about your tone and the energy, right? Like, mm-hmm, I do not have a problem being assertive, which means that sometimes it comes off bad. Like, it doesn't come off in a sweet way. It comes off as, like, it reinforces a stereotype about people with disabilities as being frantic and bitchy or whatever. Like, I'm thinking about this summer, I'm thinking about people occupying, like, is I'm getting into a pool, right? And people don't know I have a disability, but yet I need that handrail to walk down those stairs, and people are all chatting, and, like you see it at many pools,
all the time,
on the steps, reading books, like I do, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I see someone walking in or trying to get in, I always move. People don't know that, right? So my education of them doesn't come off in a nice way. And, like, I love, like, I'm learning, like, I think that's great. Like, how you do it is awesome. It's the tone, you know, it changes everything for those people, everyone else that they encounter from that point on. It's awesome. You're very wise. I'm going to stop. wise young woman.
I'm always kind. Like, I never want to, like, come off rude, but I also want to come off strong. Like, I want to come up from a point that I have a voice, and you probably did not expect an answer, but if you are speaking to me, I'm going to answer and I'm going to say something. So, like, if you don't want to get this interaction and that makes you uncomfortable, then stop saying the things you're saying, you know, stop asking what happened to you. Or, like, maybe next time you ask, you're going to be like, "Oh, you know, maybe I don't need to be asking this," or I can approach it in a different way, in a more kind way. And I had so many interactions in Vegas because, of course, it's full of people and everyone's sane, and a lot of people are under the influence of alcohol.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, people are drinking.
Yeah, so I also had a guy, he was going up on one of the stairs, and I'm going on my scooter, and he yelled, like, "Full boys." He goes, like, "Wow, I really think the wheelchair is hot." And I, like, started laughing, and I looked at him and I said, "Amen." And just, like, interactions like that throughout all weekend. But yeah, I get that every day in my life. Mm-hmm. Every day when I go to the gym, it's like in a hospital, inside a hospital. So, like, I interact, like, there's a lot of people crossing. So every day I get asked what happened, or an interaction at the gym, or so, like, and I do that every day. So obviously every day I'm getting interactions from strangers, and I just learned to, you know, answer, and how to answer, and in what tone I want to answer, and what perception I want to give them of someone with a disability. I want to answer in the most normal, like, how I will answer any other question, and how an answer that will make them think, oh, this just sounded like any other human answer, because we are human and we're just like everyone else, but people do not expect that.
Yeah. And without, you know, without the self-pity, because obviously that's not something that you carry. But also talking about, you know, friendships and relationships. I know one of the things that you were worried about when you became disabled, dating. And I know this is a big topic for us. And I think it's very much similar to the friendship dynamic of communication. But can you share a little bit about, you know, I know you're in a long-term relationship now, and I think this is one of the big things that people with disabilities struggle with, is that, you know, that they feel worthy enough to have a relationship, that they are not a burden on the person that they're with. And a lot of times they're afraid to put themselves out there authentically on dating apps or disclose. What was your personal experience like with that, re-entering the dating world after having a disability?
So I was definitely on dating apps back in the day before I met my partner. My partner and I, we've been together for 5 years now. And it was so interesting, but I will always disclose it. And I had some pictures with my cane. Some people will think that it was temporary, like that's just something, a photo when she had a cane. But I will always disclose it before the first date. Like, I'll always say, hey, just so you know, I have a physical disability and I work with a cane. This is what happened, blah, 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 blah. And thankfully, a lot of people that I went out with, they were not bad people to go out with. So I didn't have any terrible experiences, but I was always disclosing it just because I didn't want to then end up on a date with someone that did not want to go out with me because of that. And that was definitely a no negotiable for me. But now being in a relationship, I got to say, it's a learning curve and you're not going to have it all figured out. Like, you're like, obviously, if I were to date someone now, like a different person, like I will have it figured out because I've been in a relationship for 5 years. But like at the beginning, when I first started dating, I learned a lot of things with my partners and with my partner. And it's just been, it's obviously communication, and it's also being able to have uncomfortable conversations and things, putting things out there, being kind of upfront with your needs and how those needs are being met and how you can help each other and how you can. But yeah, I will not lie. Like, when I first started dating back in the day, I was 17. I was probably thinking, wait, how's going to anyone want to date me? Like, they probably are going to care. And I was always thinking, it goes with accepting who you are and yourself and the value that you bring and who you are as a person and that confidence that you build. But when I was in the process of building that confidence I have now, of course I'll have my doubts and I'll be like, what if they don't want to be with me? And now it's almost like it doesn't even cross my mind because, like, well, it's literally their loss. Like, what, like, that doesn't even cross my mind. Like, I'm not ever questioning, what if they don't want to be with me with a disability? Because like, that's not a question in my mind. If you don't want to be with me, then that's, like, I don't want to be with you either. Like, that's just not a concern at all. But it was back in the day. It just transformed the more confident I became and the more I knew that my value doesn't have anything to do with my disability. You know, this is just a quality that I have, just like any other quality any other person can have. And of course, it makes me different, but everyone's different. Everyone has different needs. People have allergies. People need glasses. You know, like, those are more common, of course. But just like that, it's just understanding that it's a human and it's going to be different than who you are and like what your experience is. And it's being able to adapt to each other, like disabled or not disabled, I think.
Your partner of those like past 5 years, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How does he respond to the pity comments that you get or he gets? You know, I would imagine he gets a lot of looks when he's with you, like, oh, you're such a good person, or, mm-hmm. you know, how does he respond?
Oh, he's immediately like, oh, no, she's a good person. Like, he immediately flips it. Like, the answer is always like, oh, no, I'm lucky to be with her. Like, you know, and people are like, stroke, literally stroke by that. But he's also learned with me, like, you know, everyone is learning. He was not exposed to anyone with a disability before dating me. So within this 5 years, he's learned a lot. He's learned to, oh, yes, we need to advocate. We need to do this. He's had people talk to him when I'm not around and be like, oh yeah, you're with that girl that has a cane. And he's like, no, her name is Jadid. That's who I am with. You know, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you referring to her like that? But yeah, like, he tries to like always call people out on that and on those things. Like, I made a vlog a while ago talking about the inspiration porn and like how there's no room on that in our relationship because we're like, no, we're both valuable and that doesn't have anything to do with my disability. And I genuinely would not expect anything less from any partner. And again, it's never to diminish what they do for me and how kind and helpful they are, my friends and my boyfriend. But it's just to put it out there that you should not settle for less, because this is just an accommodation that you need. It's not negotiable. So if people are going to love you, they're going to love you with that, not just part of it, you know? So I think that just should be something to keep in mind when you're starting today and when you're making friends and when you see those signs that they're maybe making comments that, you know, weren't so nice. So then that might be a hint that this is just not the group of friends. And I know it can be hard because making friends is hard, but I promise that you will find that group of people and maybe you will have those friends and with time they will learn and be more educated by being around you.
That's a great perspective that we try and share as well. I know it's different when it's your life and when it's your experience, but it's just, we hear this time and time again that, you know, people in healthy relationships, it's about the communication. It's about acceptance. You both have to feel comfortable dealing with the stigmas in society and not having fear around what people think of you. Because, you know, you can be a very confident person with a disability, but if you date someone who is uncomfortable and values the judgment of strangers, then mm-hmm. they're going to have that. They're going to be uncomfortable in situations with you in public. So it's important to have that confidence on both sides and to never settle for anyone who passes judgment on you or makes you feel less than or makes himself out to be the hero. I know we're coming to a close here, but I would love to share a little bit about the exciting work that you've been doing on the runway. I know you partner with some big brands and you are really advocating for disability inclusion across many different industries. Can you share a little bit about that and what's on the horizon for the end of this year and next?
Yeah, absolutely. So I partnered with Tommy in the past, Tommy Hilfiger. One of my biggest things that I love doing is working with brands that are adapted, because it's so cool that they're making clothes for people with disabilities. And also because they're putting us out there, obviously we are the ones modeling the clothes. So it's incredible. And I had amazing opportunities within these 3 years that I've been in social media. I've connected with people. I definitely think I made an impact working with some of those brands. And I am trying to get, like, this year, next year, I'm trying to do more of like public speaking, because it's like this new venture that I really enjoy. And I thankfully got some opportunities this year, and I have one coming up. It's in Spanish, which is super exciting, because I think a lot of this content also needs to translate to Latin America, also need to translate to Spanish. There's definitely less creators making content in Spanish. So like, that's a big thing that I want to start doing more of and kind of want people like me to feel represented and, you know, that I'm speaking their own language and that I am from Venezuela and I'm a Latina. So I am very excited about that opportunity coming up. And I also think it's less common. Those topics are less common in Latin America. So like, it's like a big thing that I have in the front of my mind that I want to do. But I'm definitely continuing to model and looking forward to more opportunities as a content creator as well. So,
and when are we going to see you in Sports Illustrated?
Oh, that's still on the plan. Seriously, I've auditioned. I got so close last year, so close. I almost made it into like the 12 finalists, but it was an international trip and I'm still figuring out my immigration process. So like, I couldn't leave. I couldn't go to that. Like, so obviously that's the reason why I didn't make it into the 12. But I'm still applying because there's a lot of opportunities within the US with them. And I met the team, I met NJ, and I am still like applying every year. So we'll see when that happens. But yeah,
we have an opportunity as your followers and people. We will be putting, of course, links to how to find you in our show notes. But count us in. If we can all tag Sports Illustrated and say, we in the next issue, right?
Put her on the cover.
Whatever.
Yes. Yes, it's definitely, it will be definitely exciting. I think they've only had one girl with a disability, Paralympian, and that's it. That's the, and they are very diverse, inclusive magazine, and that's what they call themselves to be. So I think, and I've called them out on that for sure. I think they should be, yeah, definitely have more than one disabled woman in their magazine in all of the years. So we'll see.
That is awesome. Now, really, I just said it, but how can people find you?
All right. So they can find me on Instagram at Yarelby. So that's Y-A-E-R-E-L-B-Y-S. That will be also on the show notes. But that's the same for my TikTok. I'm also on YouTube. I'm starting to put more content out there. So look forward to more blogs and more of the behind the scenes of my life, which is what I love about YouTube. And yeah, those are the places where you can find me for now.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us and sharing your wisdom and your powerful story. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of our followers, and we're sure that they will be connecting with you after the show and following your content as you continue to do incredible work. But thank you so much, Yare. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we wish you the best. And hopefully we will be crossing paths in the next few months and years as we align with our missions on disability advocacy and in our circle of influencers. So,
and see you at a concert. So thank you for that. For people who are hesitant about getting out there and doing things, it's all about communication and planning. And you look yep. and you... So you're really embracing it as, so thank you for being with us, and bye
of
everyone.
Of course. Thank you so much. Bye everyone. I appreciate it.
Bye guys. Hey Embracers. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Embrace It podcast, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios, executive produced by George Andriopoulos, and hosted by Lainey Ishbia and Estella Lugo. Our music and sound effects are licensed through Epidemic Sound. Embrace It is hosted with Buzzsprout.
Do you have a disability-related topic you'd love for us to feature? Or could someone you know be a fabulous guest on our show? We would love to hear your comments and feature them on our next podcast. So leave us a voicemail, or you can even send us a text to 631-517-0066.
Make sure to subscribe to this feed wherever podcasts are available, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. Follow us at @embraceit_podcast on Instagram. And make sure to follow all the great podcasts produced by Launchpad 516 Studios.
We hope you join us next time and continue to embrace it.